Welcome to Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. I'm Melody Edwards. This week, we bring you a civil discourse between a Muslim community member and a man who started the Facebook page Stop Islam in Gillette. The idea of the conversation was just to get two people sitting in the same room, but it ends up going farther, bringing up painful encounters.
It wasn't just you, it was all the people waiting there with the flags and the camo and their guns.
They were there when I got there. I told them to stay put and leave you alone.
And there are glimmers when these diametrically opposed men are able to acknowledge mistakes they made along the way.
I probably shouldn't have ever wandered down there in the first place. I concede that point.
A conversation not to be missed today on Open Spaces from Wyoming Public Radio News. Welcome to Open Spaces. For Wyoming Public Radio News, I'm Melody Edwards. Today, as part of our series, I Respectfully Disagree, we bring together two men that most people would consider complete adversaries.
And you got personally insulting to me.
Yeah, as you insulted me as well.
Not on the level you did.
I'm not gonna.
I don't know that we want to go. We can't get into a tit for tat.
Aftab Khan and his family have lived in the Gillette area for over 100 years. A few years back, the family opened a mosque there. Brett Colvin started a Facebook page called Stop Islam in Gillette, and after the mosque opened, he knocked on the door during services while a large number of people rallied behind him, some of them armed. The event was covered extensively in the local and the international news. Quickly, the online rhetoric between them grew ugly. But until now, they've never met in person.
I didn't know if you wanted the sauce on, so you put the sauce
on
the side.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
After all the negotiating it took us to get here, it's kind of amazing to be sitting down at the table with these two. It had taken months for me to arrange this conversation. Part of it was my own doubt that a civil discourse could work between two people so divided. Now that we're all in the same room, I really have no idea what to expect. Aftab Khan's family owns several hotels. He invites us to one of his restaurants. They shake hands politely but quickly, and the three of us sit down to share a meal. I start by reminding both of them of the rules of civil discourse. Not to interrupt, to share speaking time fairly. Keep an open mind. Be respectful, even if you don't respect someone else's ideas. To ask each other questions.
And also, have a sense of humor. That's like the biggest thing, actually.
My job as the mediator is to make sure we stick to those rules. My job is not to take sides, and I intentionally have no real goal, except maybe to make sure that they both feel heard by each other. We start by helping recognize each other's humanity by sharing some childhood stories. It's an easy place to start. Both Khan and Colvin grew up 100 miles away from each other in northeastern Wyoming, and Colvin is only 8 years older than Khan.
I was born in Sheridan, Wyoming. We lived there until I was about 14, then we moved to Warland. I lived there for a while, graduated high school there, moved to Laramie, I went to university there, got my degree. And
what was your degree in?
Molecular biology. Came back and to Warland for a little bit, and mm-hmm. then we moved to Gillette when we purchased the Best Western. Yeah. So I've been here for 18 years.
How old are you?
I'm 40, almost 43. So yeah. I've been in Wyoming in one city or another my entire life. So
you feel like you had a pretty comfortable childhood?
Yeah,
growing
it was
up in
a good
Wyoming?
It was a good childhood, it's Wyoming's been very good to all of us, and mm-hmm. so we're definitely happy being here and very proud of the mm-hmm. state.
And you have a pretty large family?
Yeah, a lot of family, a lot of cousins spread mm-hmm. all over the area. And then I've got my own kids and my wife.
Yeah.
So I mean, it's just, it's a big family.
Yeah. How many children do you have?
I have four kids.
Yeah. Brett, how about you? What was your childhood like growing up?
I was born in Gillette.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 51 years old. My parents initially had a cattle ranch here, way outside of town. My father had a lot of business interests. Mm-hmm. He owned pear orchards. My father had a multinational construction company that operated in five countries. When I graduated from high school, I went into the Marine Corps, and I served 10 years there. and then an additional 2 years in the UN, which I spent most of that in Africa. Mm. After a series of catastrophic injuries, I was eventually discharged. And serving the military doesn't teach you how to civilian. They don't teach you how to, your life is structured and ordered and you just fill in the spaces where commanded. When you come home, you haven't spent the last 10 years paying bills, looking for a job, you know. Mm-hmm. They train you to blow stuff up, kill people, jump out of airplanes, mm-hmm. ride tanks. They don't teach you how to pour concrete or sit in an office or anything like that.
Yeah.
They don't teach you how to civilian when you leave the military, and that's a big problem.
So that was a shock coming back.
Well, that's a big problem for everybody that leaves the military.
Yeah.
So I had to feel my way around and try to find my own way. And so I tried all kinds of things. I did everything from work on a carnival to running drilling rigs, and I've owned several businesses. I have a couple right now.
And do your children live here?
All moved to like Seattle and things like that. My daughter's like a manager at Walmart.
Mm-hmm. And your kids are pretty
young. In school, I got two little ones are at home. And my other two daughters are in elementary school.
And how is it raising kids in Gillette?
It's good. I mean, it's a nice place to raise a family. It's very family-oriented.
Aftab Khan's uncle is famous. He was known as Tamale Louie and was featured in an article in the New Yorker called Citizen Khan. He moved to Sheridan in the early 1900s from what is now Pakistan and opened a restaurant serving hamburgers and Mexican food. All the locals loved him, and Sheridan recently built a sculpture in their downtown for him. Eventually, he raised six children there, and several family members joined him in the area, including Aftab's father. Now, the Khan family numbers in the hundreds and live all around the Rocky Mountain region. But just to show you how tangled these men's lives are, in that New Yorker article about Tamale Louie, Brett Colvin makes an appearance. It chronicles his protests against the Khan family's mosque and quotes him using strong derogatory language against them online.
Louis, who came over, he was very successful. I mean, mm-hmm. he became a millionaire a long time ago, even before the Depression. In fact, he lost most of his money during the Great Depression. And then he started all over again and he made it all back. But he was, a very good businessman, a very hard worker.
Yeah.
And very much a family-oriented type person. And I think he did a lot of good for the community there. He went out of his way to help all the World War II soldiers that came back mm-hmm. on the train. He fed them for free mm-hmm. and always met up with them at the train station. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of the veterans still remember, and their families remember how much he did for them. Mm-hmm. So he's well known for that.
I know that both of you are businessmen in the community. You know how the economic downturn, a lot of the coal layoffs and things, how that might have affected each of your businesses. Maybe you could start, Brett, just talking a little bit about...
Put me out of business. I went from putting my competition out of business to where I wasn't even making the rent on my office.
Yeah. And can you talk a little bit about what your business, what you do with your business?
Well, what I was doing was repairing computers and cell phones. And I basically got into it because the other guys in the computer shops in town were mm-hmm. basically just gouging the crap out of people. Mm-hmm. And I'd been sitting in front of a computer since 1979. Previous to opening the business, I'd already started studying circuit board repair. Because mm-hmm. what I wanted to do is, at the mine, they got these haul trucks, and mm-hmm. they got these there's like 12 circuit boards mm-hmm. in them, and each one of them is like $60,000 a piece. And when they get damaged, they throw them away and buy another one for $60,000. I thought, if I could figure out how to fix those things. And at the time, my health was getting pretty bad. I had lost a wife, and I kind of lost my little bit of my will to live. So I was getting obesely fat and mm-hmm. diabetic.
Yeah.
And I had ended up in a coma at one point. Yeah.
Really?
I literally laid on my living room floor for 2 days before somebody found me in my house. Yeah. So I spent a month in the hospital, and during that month, my landlord just took everything I had and threw it away and made me homeless. And I ended up in the homeless shelter, of all places. But.
And it wasn't just reintegrating into society after the military that was hard. Colvin's wife also died around the time of the economic bust in Gillette, sending him into a nosedive, personally and professionally.
I spent 40 days there. And in that 40 days, I got myself a little tablet thing and some repair tools and things like that, and literally worked out of a coffee shop downtown. Mm-hmm. None of my customers even knew I was homeless.
Right.
I worked my way out of it to where I was back in an office again. Wow. And got a place again. Yeah. It wasn't easy, but...
And how's it been going? You know, it seems like the economy in Wyoming is picking up a little bit.
It's picking up, mm-hmm. slowly but surely. Pretty much everybody's economy here, like, he's tied to tourism.
Off top.
I'm tied to coal miners, mm-hmm. and oil rig workers, mm-hmm. and office, mm-hmm. professionals, the odd commercial client.
Would you say that's fair?
Partially, but I think a lot of our business relies on, these days, it's oil and gas activity, pipeline activity, that sort of thing, support industries. Coal, of course, that downturn hurt. I mean, the oil downturn hurt a lot worse. I've been doing it since I was a young person, mm-hmm. and it's been definitely the hardest downturn I've ever been a part of.
Yeah,
and I think if you'd asked my parents, they've been here long. Of course, they've been around longer. It's probably the worst for them too.
Really? So. I wonder, off top, if you could also talk just a little bit about, there's also been just some changes in the political mood, how it's been to be in Gillette as there's been more tensions in the country, you know, with the ban on predominantly Muslim countries. How's it been living here?
Oh, well, it's not been, I mean, it hasn't changed much. I mean, mm-hmm. there's just, I mean, very few incidents of any kind. Most of them happen online.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in person. I mean, nobody's ever said anything in person to me.
Right.
Of course, the rhetoric online is completely different. A lot of it stemmed from the opening of the mosque. It coincided with the election. And some people out there believe that, for some reason, that Trump was trying to target Muslims, which mm-hmm. doesn't make sense because mm-hmm. I mean, he has a good friendship with with Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. and with UAE and various other Muslim countries. So, I mean, I think that their aims are misguided. So, for me, I was supportive of Trump because of his economic policy. I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the things he says. I don't agree with the way he says things, mm-hmm. but I do like his economic policies.
So you're seeing that it's kind of helping your businesses.
Yeah, it is, and it has. And if it had been a different Republican, a GOP type leader, I would have voted for that person, mm-hmm. as well. Mm-hmm. I've always, voted GOP. Mm-hmm. So I mean, that hasn't changed. But with the downturn coinciding in this area, coinciding with the election, there was a lot of there was a lot of talk about how immigrants were taking, jobs away from, mm-hmm. Americans and things like that. But I don't know how that fits in with the population around here, because most of the Muslims here were born here. So it doesn't make sense. I think people are just trying to use it as a political tool to try to gain support or maybe go after a certain group of people. For me, the online rhetoric was bad, but I think it was just a handful of people, mm-hmm. that were out there targeting or trying to provoke,
yeah.
a Muslim response.
Yeah.
So overall, my life hasn't yeah. changed, and I would say
it hasn't made it hard to necessarily live.
No, I think we got a lot more people supporting us and come out and supporting us, mm-hmm. since it began.
Yeah.
And so, like, again, it's the election coinciding with the mosque, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I know that Brett, that's something that you've participated in with the Gillette Against Islam Facebook page. I think that what I'm hearing is an interested, like, getting together like this, face-to-face, getting in person, getting off the, getting out from behind the screens. How are you feeling as far as the need for more in-person conversation about some of these issues?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'll address what he said.
Yeah, sure. Absolutely.
As far as the partial Muslim ban, that was Barack Obama's policy that Donald Trump just continued with. Barack Obama made that list and implemented it first. Donald Trump just continued that.
Mm-hmm. So you're kind of agreeing with what he's saying, is that it wasn't necessarily motivated by racism.
No. Well, there's no racism when it comes to Muslims. Muslim's a choice, not a race. And that's
anything you'd want to respond in terms with that?
I would agree a little bit. I think some people believe that Muslims our race and mm-hmm. our religion, mm-hmm. kind of like Judaism. And that's not true, mm-hmm. because there's hundreds of different ethnicities mm-hmm. all across the world that are mm-hmm. Muslims
yeah.
in dominant countries, mm-hmm. Muslim-dominant countries. But as far as he said, I believe it's actually it's true. I mean, Obama had a strategy in there for limiting certain immigrants from certain countries. Mm-hmm. It's been going on since 9/11, I believe, mm-hmm. in one form or another. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, my point with saying that was a lot of people use that as yeah. a platform to go out and spew against Muslims.
Stay tuned. When we come back, Aftab Khan and Brett Colvin discuss how the angry online rhetoric turned into angry in-person protests on the steps of Gillette's Mosque. That's coming up on Open Spaces. Discourse between two very public Gillette adversaries. We join them as they begin the prickly business of discussing their first encounters.
As for the mosque, I was completely unaware of it till a certain point. At the time, I was involved with the local militia, which I no longer am. Everybody comes to me. I get these phone calls. I get this and that. At this point, I was minding my own business.
Well, minding his own business might be stretching it. Around this time, Colvin started a Facebook page called Gillette Against Islam that drew a couple hundred people to join. When Facebook started shutting that page down because of some of the language on it was deemed as hate speech, Colvin renamed the group Stop Islam and Gillette and other names. It started to give him a reputation as an organizer in the community.
We had a meeting and we're like, well, what are we going to do? What are we not going to do? Well, the first thing I told them is y'all need to settle down. I said, you don't know what the facts are here, okay? And even if they do have one down there and you don't like that, there's nothing legally you can do about it. Mm-hmm. The only time you can mess with them down there mm-hmm. is when they get stupid, mm-hmm. and that's a federal purview. It's not, mm-hmm. not a private one. Mm-hmm. We don't have Wild West justice down here. Just because somebody pisses you off, you can't go riding in with guns blazing and kick mm-hmm. the doors in and burn the house down.
Right.
I said, I will go down there, I'll knock on the door by myself and ask what's going on. It was right after I had this meeting, had this decision, I had a reporter from the news, the local paper here, calls me up. The reporter says, yeah, I hear that you're going to go down to the mosque and you're going to go down and confront them. He says, is there any way that I can be there? And I said, it's free country, do what you want. He says, well, when do you want to do this? I don't know, sometime this week. He suggested, well, let's go down there Friday afternoon. I said, why Friday afternoon? I says, you know, that's kind of like their Sunday church to go down there by good one Friday afternoon. He says, well, yeah, I looked that up online. He goes, yeah, that makes a great time for you to go down there and bother them. He says, go down there about 1:30 and I'll already be there. So I tell the guys, yeah, I'm gonna go down there Friday afternoon. So when I get there, I used to have a Cadillac that's blown up since then. So I drive up my Cadillac, there's like five trucks sitting up there and about 12 people sitting up there. They've got all their camo on and all kinds of shit. I'm like, what are you guys doing? And, well, we're waiting for you. We want to see you go do this. who knows, you might need some backup. I go down to knock on the door. Boom, this angry dude. I don't even know who he was. He's like, he was upset that I was knocking on the door. And I could see behind him, I could see this reporter guy with a camera taking pictures. And then this smaller guy, he kind of heavy set, he comes out. And he's like, what do you want? What do I do for you? This is basically, I just come down here to see what the hell is going on. What you guys are doing here? And he said, well, we're having prayer right now. You're interrupting us. You know, we really don't have time for this conversation. And I understand the Muslim schedules as far as their times of prayer and things like that. I spent years in Afghanistan, in Kuwait, in Pakistan. I've read the Quran 3 times and the Hadith, okay? I understand, okay? But I didn't set that time up. The reporter guy did, okay? So if you want to get mad about that, you go bust that guy's balls.
I'm not getting mad about anything. Well, okay, if somebody told me, hey, AFTAB, let's go talk to these guys at this church and find out what's going on, 10 o'clock on Sunday morning or whenever the service is. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just common sense. Yeah, I mean, well, and I don't think they were mad about it. I think they were scared. I think the people in the mosque were scared more than mad. They were not mad. The guy that you spoke of, the heavyset kid, he's dead.
Yeah, that's what
he died of cancer, but he's probably the most friendly person I've ever known in my life.
I had that impression, and I didn't say anything contrary to
and
that.
I'm just saying that if I'm not going to pin the blame on the newspaper, I'm not going to pin it on, you know, if you had an option too. If you'd say, hey, you guys give me a call, I'd like to come by and meet you guys, sit down and discuss a few things, I would think it would have been better served and not let the people in the, you know, out there waiting dictate terms. I think people would have been more amenable to sit down and talk to you. I think we would have been better served, and I think you would have learned more about what was going on without being confrontational.
Well, I wasn't confrontational. I was unarmed, and I came
I'm not saying
peacefully.
That's... Confrontation can happen without arms. And
yeah.
It's just like me going in and interrupting an event at a church. It's not proper. I mean, it's just... I would never think of doing that. It wasn't just you. It was all the people waiting there with the flags and the camo and their guns.
They were there when I got there.
Well, I'm saying
I told them to stay put and leave you alone.
That's what got everybody riled up. And then when you came there, they didn't know if you were packing a gun or if you were armed or not. They just were scared. They were all scared. I remember because I was there. If they weren't there and you just walked up and said, hey, I got some questions, they would have sat you down. In fact, it happened probably a dozen times since you went there where somebody from the community, not a Muslim, would walk in and say, I got some questions for you. They would be invited in, and they were sat down on the wall. And nobody had ever had a problem with you going to the mosque or any person from the community going to the mosque. It was the whole event that day that caused people to be scared.
Now, I wonder, you know, I think the story brings up an issue about the role of the media in escalating all of this
tension. I think that's partially the
blame. San Bernardino was just 4 days before that, you know.
Yeah.
San Bernardino happened. Who are these people from San Bernardino? Who committed these crimes? I mean, they were people that, how do you link us to those people?
I didn't.
Well, you did. You just said you brought it up. You wouldn't have brought it up.
Well, that's the reason my tensions were high. Mm-hmm. And I went down there to calm things down. And then basically media forces blew everything out of proportion. And you got personally insulting to me.
Yeah, as you insulted me as well.
Not on the level you did.
Well, I'm not going to.
I don't know that we want to go. We can't get into a tit for tat.
There was a lot of tensions then.
Yeah.
And people said a lot. I said a lot of things that I regret. Yeah. But... You know, I was attacked too, and I lashed out. Personal attacks, I think, were uncalled for. And I think the ones against me, against my family, against my children, I mean, those were uncalled for. The personal attacks, the vicious attacks, and sometimes you respond with that kind of rhetoric, and that's not the best way to solve any problem.
Hard work they're doing here, arms crossed over their chests. Sometimes they point at each other in anger. The mood in the room is electric. Most people hide from such encounters, but Khan and Colvin keep their seats. And I start to think, maybe we're getting somewhere. When we come back, they go one step further. This is Open Spaces. Public Radio News, I'm Melody Edwards, and you're listening to a special edition of Open Spaces, part of our series, I Respectfully Disagree. When we left off, Aftab Khan and Brett Colvin were doing the tricky work of listening to the other one's story of an armed confrontation at the Gillette Mosque.
Did you watch my interview on Al Jazeera?
No, I did not.
Oh, you missed out. Because at the end of my interview on Al Jazeera, which was heavily edited and kind of an ambush thing, I said quite plainly that you guys had every right to practice your religion, have your mosque, and be left in peace, just as much as I wanted the same thing for myself and my church.
Yeah.
I wouldn't
are
do
you
it
saying
to you.
That,
I don't
saying,
want you doing it to me.
Are you saying that now? Is that what you're saying right now?
I still say that. We have rights, guaranteed right to the pursuit of happiness, not a guarantee of happiness. This is a constitutional republic. This isn't a theocracy, a monarchy, or anything else. This is of and by the people. You are the people, you are the people, he's the people, I'm the people. And it's up to us individually to figure out how to get along with each other, or at least agree to leave each other the hell alone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. The philosophy of living life in Wyoming is leave me be.
Well, I just don't understand. I don't know how you can reconcile constitutionality and the guarantee of the freedom of religion with stop a religious group from being in Gillette, Wyoming.
Yeah, well, there was another group that merged with that one. It was stop the Syrians from coming here, which we successfully did. Wyoming was the only state that didn't have a refugee relocation program. This was the only state that wasn't getting refugees. And at the time, Obama was having a push on this. And Matt Mead sent a letter of intent to the UN and President Obama saying, yeah, we're interested in getting into this program. This is just before we heard about him and his mosque. We started a phone battery campaign that shut down his phones in his offices for a week and a half and basically chased him out of town. He went to some governor's convention in California. By the time he'd made it to California to get out of town, there was an organization in almost every city in Wyoming opposing this crowd. It got powerful enough that he addressed it from California at the governor's thing. He said, everybody hates it. I'm not going to do it. Okay. We got that shut down. And right about the time he made this announcement, his thing happened.
Which thing?
The confrontation at the mosque, or whatever you want to call
okay.
it. So that group took a radical pivot, and then the militia jumped into it, and then out of nowhere, these skinheads appeared. This town has a lot of inherent racism. The only time I ever saw black persons when I left this town, or they were on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I've seen them run out of restaurants as a kid.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I mean, you're saying Congolese people or people mm-hmm. from Africa that move to America are terrorists? Or I just don't understand the safety concern there.
Well, I've seen what's happened to Europe.
Okay, well, we're in America.
Yeah, and the Europeans let them in willy-nilly,
well,
and they're paying
anything,
for it.
I don't know much about, you know, I know a little bit the fact that some of these people that came from Africa committed crimes, but there's What I'm saying is, I don't know if that you can generalize the population from that. And I'll say this, you're saying that the Congolese or child soldiers or some of the people they brought from the church groups, by the way, Christian church groups, are bringing into the country is somehow negatively affecting the country out here in this area, and somehow the Muslims that have been living here for 100 years are going to be thrown in that group too? I just don't understand the
Not necessarily.
But was that sort of...
Okay, there was a lot of things going on all at once.
Yeah.
Okay, and no one person was in charge. Mm-hmm. There was no leader of this group.
Okay. Well, so now looking so, back on this time period, I mean, what do you feel like maybe you might have regretted about the way that all happened? Anything that you would like to look back on and say, I wish I could have done differently?
Well, I probably should have never wandered down there in the first place under the conditions that that reporter said. I should have done it the way Khan said. I could see that point.
Like, what do you think might have been a better way of handling it at that point?
At that point, I think the best thing would have said, hey, Brett would have said, hey, I've got some concern. He would have sent me a private message, hey, I've got some concerned citizens here. We just want to sit down with you. We want to know more about what you guys are doing, mm-hmm. how the mosque is going to operate.
Yeah. Like, you know, maybe like his question about whether there's a connection between this refugee thing and your group.
I think that would have been clarified in 5 minutes,
right.
if he had given me the time then to clarify it. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, but your response like when you I was talking to you back then was invite me over to shovel the dog shit in your yard and shit like that.
Okay, are we gonna sit there and dwell on that?
We don't want to go.
Because you said plenty of things about me. I'm not even going to repeat.
We don't want to go there.
Okay, you said plenty of things about me that are much more condescending and much more insulting than what I said at that time.
And we don't need to get into it.
That's
not going to help us.
You're right. I'll stop it.
Okay. I'm just saying there would have been, if we didn't go down that path, there would have been an opportunity to sit down and discuss.
I wasn't in charge.
And I'm not saying you were in charge, but there was some coordination.
Would you be willing to do that even now, Brett? You know, just go and sit down and learn a little bit more. Would that relieve some of... you know, your fears and your concerns, to just learn a little bit more about what's going on in the Muslim community in Gillette.
I know how the Muslim community works.
From a distance, but what about a more, you know, he's inviting.
What do you think?
Would you be willing to, you know, he's inviting you. What do you think?
This is the first time I've ever met him personally. I've never seen him in person.
Yeah.
That's true, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't recall.
And that's okay. That isn't that kind of part of the problem is not...
I think so. I think that there's an image that, I don't know, that gets bounced around in their meetings that says that Muslims are evil and they're this and they hate America, they hate our values, they want to, you know, they're violent, they harbor ill will toward America. I mean, all that stuff was bouncing around in their chamber, their echo chamber, and they came out all mad. Mm-hmm. Well, it's all completely false.
Okay.
Ridiculous.
And I think that you probably have stereotypes that you're assuming that
I want to address what he just said there. How many Muslims are there?
In the world?
Yes.
1.7, 1.8 billion.
Okay, what would 1% of that be?
What, a million?
What are you
know.
I got a point.
Okay.
A couple million?
Okay. Now, just being conservative, seeing the radical portion of the believers of Islam, the followers of Allah.
That's assuming that 1% are radical, which I don't know if that's true.
Okay, just being fair, if you're going to assume 1% of the locals are radical and hate your gods, let's assume 1% of the Muslims in the world are radical and hate my gods.
I won't accept
that. Okay.
It seems like a
but
big
that's still,
assumption.
2 million is a titanic number.
Okay.
Okay, but my point I'm getting at here...
We got murderers, we've got rapists of all... colors of all, you know, ages of all religions.
Okay.
How do we lump them into a religious category just because they're criminals? I mean, these people you're talking about are criminals. They're criminals.
They're universally derided. I get that. But see, this is a bowl with 100 cherry tomatoes in it.
Okay.
And 10 of them will kill you the minute you put them in your mouth.
Come on.
Do you? No. Let's.
Okay. How many?
You say what you want to say. I want to say what I want to say. I'll let you say whatever you want. I don't care. So, do you know there's 10 of them in there that are gonna kill you? what do you do with the bowl? Do you bring it in? Do you set it on the kitchen table with your family? Or do you throw the damn thing out and not let it in your kitchen in the first place?
Is it a fair analogy?
It's not even a rational analogy because
you're talking about people.
You're talking about people. And you're also, how do you know that?
So is it the United States?
Let me ask you a question, Brett. Okay. How do you know anybody, forget about Muslims for a minute, anybody that walks in, that comes through immigration isn't a criminal or a murderer? Or a rapist. Why not focus on all potentially bad people that come into this country instead of focusing on one group? I mean, I don't want any criminals.
There's always going to be some.
And by Europe every group in the world. By every group in the world.
Yes.
There's plenty of people coming from the South.
And my answer to that would be no immigration at all.
Okay, that's a completely different thing.
Universal.
Then you should put no immigration on your group. How about no immigrations, no immigrant? That's a whole different story.
If nothing else, I'd say stop all immigration, period. Excluding the criminal element.
That's different than Muslim, somebody based on...
If you want to stop immigration, by all means, you can change your group to stop all immigration to the United States.
Stay tuned, as the conversation does something I didn't let myself even hope for going into this. They discuss where they might have some common ground.
Met a man wearing a t-shirt, said Virginia is for lovers. Had a Bible in his left hand and a bottle in the other. He said all you're really given is the sunshine in your name. We both started laughing when the sky started to rain. Get along down the road.
You're listening to Open Spaces. I'm Melody Edwards. Already, both Brett Colvin and Aftab Khan have acknowledged to the other that they made mistakes. So I take a small leap. I ask them if there was anything, even something small, that they might agree on.
I agree with his assessment about the Constitution and how we are guaranteed this right to practice our religion. None of that can be marginalized. That's what I agree. And I think that if we follow the law and we give everybody the benefit of the doubt, I think this kind of thing won't even be needed. I mean, honestly, right. It would probably have been solved 2 years ago or 3 years ago had we done that.
Yeah.
You know, I just want to be given the benefit of the doubt. And I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt today. That's why I decided to have him come here today. Yeah. Because I don't want a confrontational type of event. Mm-hmm. I just want to work through any kind of issues he may have and try to clarify things. That's basically what I'm trying to do here.
How about you? What are some of the points that maybe you might agree on?
God can do as he wants. I haven't bothered him in a long time, have I?
You admit you bothered me before.
Yes, I have, and I said so, and I should have done some things differently. I left him alone. I've never been back to his mosque. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's not my mosque. Yeah. I don't own the house.
Right. Yeah.
It was just a way of our family just to kind of plant a flag here and kind of just have a place to pray.
But I haven't bothered it. I'm not the one driving by there chucking pork and beans at it. I'm not throwing bacon at it. That isn't me. Okay. I'm a grown-ass man, and I behave myself.
Okay. It seems like you guys are helping each other to kind of bust up some of those kinds of stereotypes.
Nobody's ever, first of all, every interview I've ever done was an ambush thing. Mm-hmm. And they were looking for the hillbilly racist to rant, rave, and foam at the mouth. And they never ever printed or released any of the thing I ever said, that, except for Al Jazeera threw in a 30, really, go look up my interview. I gave you.
I don't doubt it. I know how sometimes the media works. I know how that goes.
I do think the media has a role here. I think the media has a role.
The media absolutely had it a role. They needed it. It's like Stormy Daniels syndrome. Okay, we've got something to cling on to. We got something to beat drums about. Okay, I would, you know, when I Google myself, I get over a million results now.
Can I say one thing before you go on? I just want to say one thing.
No, that's fine.
Brett, sometimes your affiliations are not good, and those people can twist your views.
Sometimes people choose a leader whether the person wants to be a leader or not.
It was kind of random that you ended up becoming the face of this. The media sort of decided you're going to be the poster child for
when ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, Al Jazeera, and Fox News, the New York Times, the New Yorker.
So you're saying that these people sort of made you the leader. Do you think you would have any influence on your group by saying that?
I had
you can't be a leader and not have influence at the same time. I mean,
I had some, but they all have free will, and I never gave anybody
has free will.
You have to do this. I never said you have to do this. No. I never did any of that.
I'm not saying dictating terms. I'm saying you have some influence if they crowned you their leader, like you admitted, that you could sway them away from confrontation and negative
seek
attacks.
Out, and maybe seek
oh,
out.
You have no idea how many things I've shut down, buddy. I've done you hundreds of favors.
Brett, you
may not think so, but I have nipped a lot of things in the bud that could have come your way.
I think you're assuming that we're scared, or I'm scared. I've never been scared. I've never
Well, then why'd you call the FBI?
I didn't call the FBI.
You're on video saying you called the feds on me.
I did not call the FBI. They called me. Some of you guys are out there saying a lot of things that sort of stirred up the pot and got to where, you know, you're attacking a certain group of people. Now, the stuff you see online, they're tracking all that. They're looking at that kind of thing. The hate speech, the negative comments. But I did not call the FBI.
For 3 years, I got 400 or 500 emails a day, 90% of which were death threats by people in countries, some countries I've never even heard of. Yeah. Okay, it went on for years. Every time I went to my email box, I just deleted everything. I never even read it. Mm-hmm. I missed a lot of important emails because of it. Okay.
But you got to understand something. Yeah, you look, if I talk to my kids and I talk about why they can't understand it, they can't understand that being here, going to school, you know, regular Prairie Wind Elementary School, doing day-to-day things, why people are trying to ostracize us or put us aside and say, these people are dangerous, watch out for them. You know, no, I can't explain it to them. And it's hard to rationalize that and explain that to your children.
Yeah.
But we're American. That's the bottom line. We're American. We want what's good for the country. We want what's good for the community. I voted for Donald Trump not because I liked all the stuff he says and some of the comments. I liked him because I felt that he would revive the economy here. So if you look at the economic part of it, that's something we have in common.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, we both want Wyoming to succeed. I want Gillette to succeed. I want, you know, the oil business to perk back up.
And it seems like you agree on the strategy, you know, of the
And I agree with the way he's going about it. Mm-hmm. I agree with his deregulation, his lowering of taxes. Mm-hmm. Those are things I agree with.
Yeah, he's been a pleasant surprise, but this might be a shock to you, but I didn't vote for him. Nor did I vote for Hillary Clinton.
I voted
but you're a supporter of him now.
He had to earn that.
Yeah.
He had to earn that.
Okay.
But I voted for him because I believe that the Republican platform was positive.
Oh, Hillary Clinton would have been an absolute disaster.
Well, that's why we have something in common there. So that's what I'm trying to say. All these Muslims here, I guarantee you most of them voted for Trump.
What do you feel like parting words might be with each other?
After you.
Well, I just want to say, you know, I think a lot of our feelings were hurt when all this happened because we consider ourselves Americans. I mean, all of us do. Mm-hmm. We love the country. We support the country. We try to be a productive part of the community. And I think that was more of it was the sadness that happened over the last few years and the disappointment.
As I reach the sunset of my life.
Oh, you're a young man. Come on.
No, I have a short lifespan left. But trust me on that. I'm an outrageous friend and a ferocious enemy. And I don't know how to operate otherwise. I'm a product of generation of war machines. I'm a war machine. When people raise my ire, I hold nothing back. And unfortunately, Colin got caught in the shotgun blast. And, you know, sorry about that, but I haven't been letting you rent free space in my head for a couple years now. So the only time I think about you is when somebody brings you up. So you do
and
what you want
me,
to do.
Believe me, you're not the focus of my day, but at all, okay?
do whatever you want. I don't care. I believe in you leave me alone, I leave you alone. Time heals all wounds,
yeah.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
And only a fool holds a grudge his entire life. Okay. Do as you please. God bless. You know.
We can move on from here, maybe.
Yeah, you know.
I don't have any grudges. I mean, I've already forgotten everything. I don't hold any grudges. You know, I hope that you're healthy and you're successful, and that goes to any of my neighbors.
Well, I think that we can wrap up here, but I really thank you guys both so much.
Thanks for having me. Thanks
really,
for being up here.
Really appreciate it. This was wonderful.
The moderator, this conversation exceeded the expectations I had going into it. Both sides admitted they made mistakes, and they found a point of agreement that they both hope Trump can help the Gillette economy and their businesses. And Brett Colvin even kinda apologized in his own quirky way for letting his reaction to national news lead to protests at the mosque. But I kept wondering, did they feel that the conversation was a success? So I called them each up on the phone. Off-top Khan says he wasn't sure what to expect.
I was not surprised at the way he was carrying himself when he first walked in. Not over the course of the conversation, it sort of flowed better and it flowed easier. And
he has a theory about why the conversation started flowing.
Maybe we had some common ground on some not religious issues, but political issues. It's like economic political issues. And I think that kind of broke the ice.
And Khan says he believed Colvin when he said that he didn't intend to unleash so much anger in Gillette.
I believe him on that. I don't have any reason to doubt him on that. It seemed like he was stunned and kind of shocked by how everything turned out. And I don't think he intended it to happen that way. So I give him credit for that.
For his part, Brett Colvin has one great regret.
The thing that bothered me the most was when Colin was talking about how it affected his children, you know, and I felt bad about that. And had I thought about it more at the time, I would have apologized about that.
That's apology number two from Brett. Not that I'm counting.
Children are off limits. I've got a thing for widows and orphans and small furry animals, you know.
Over the phone, Khan had re-invited Colvin to come visit the mosque. I take a risk and ask Colvin again to go.
Well, I'm not at all interested.
Colvin still expresses a lot of prejudices against the Muslim religion, which he attributes to his service in the military.
I'm a Catholic, and the Muslims and the Catholics have been at war for 2,000 years or so. And nothing's going to change that.
But here's where things are different when I talk to Colvin. He doesn't go after Aftab Khan in personal terms. In his parting words, he says,
God bless him. May he have a wonderful life. Just leave me out of it.
The divisions run deep between these two. Wishing each other good health, a wonderful life, heck, that's a lot more than I would have thought possible when I started. For Wyoming Public Radio, I'm Melody Edwards. Thanks so much for joining us for this special edition of Open Spaces. You can hear today's show again at our website, wyomingpublicmedia.org. While you're there, sign up for our podcast. Anna Rader is our web editor. Open Spaces is a production of Wyoming Public Radio News.